relationship with Coach Mitchell. Because when I look at your time at Orlando Pirates, you know, you were one of the first assistant coaches who were very involved. You know, personally, I'd never really seen that in South African football, where I'd see it an assistant coach was very involved, but you were very involved.
Yeah.
How was that relationship like?
No, the relationship was very good. Was good because of his personality. And there's a lot of talk. I mean, I was in Uganda now. I spent a lot of time with Mitchell.
Mm.
And I know there's a lot of people that say this and say that, but everything was done within the confines of portfolios, number one. Number two, also of the responsibilities that we got given, because we were called into a meeting and it was laid out very clear what was, because from the start when I joined Pirates, the turning point was what we had spoken about with regards to how this thing would go into the future. And already Mitchell laying the ground to manage the team a little bit more, because and anyway, he was way better than me in terms of man management. And I think when we lost Mitchell in that season when he left, we lost someone who was very important for us, because he could manage the group better. He knew which buttons to press, like calling Musalino and Lodge. He would call Lodge Nyoso and Memela. He had a way of managing the players, and he was very, very good at that. And one of the things that I learned from Mitchell was the importance of managing people and having people around you that like to be around you.
Yeah.
And people loved to be around Mitchell.
Mm.
But also Mitchell also realized that one of my strong points is from a tactical perspective and from a preparation, and even the club then put that clear to give us these responsibilities. And sometimes with emotions and also with this youthful exuberance that you get rid of as you grow older, to people who didn't understand what was happening within the club, it maybe looked in a different way. But would I change my behavior and the things that we did at Pirates, and the responsibilities and the way the club played and the relative success that we had, would I change? No. I would not do anything different. I would keep the things the way they are and still learn what I learned and still play the role that I played the same way without changing anything. And, but that was because Mitchell was that type of person who also was not insecure about his responsibilities, his role, and more than anything, when people around you succeed and thrive and enjoy the working with you and within the organization as a leader, it points again to you as the leader and the type of personality that you carry in allowing people to be the best versions of themselves, even if it means that they become more important than you. But because you've got this assurance and you know what you bring to the institution, to the environment, you are able to still allow them to thrive.
So the period then comes and you then find yourself in the big moment, you know. What was that like? And especially upon the whole idea of you taking on this role now, what was that like? What were the conversations like with the chairman?
No, but you see, the challenge with the transition was how it happened. And I must tell you, it was a crazy period for pre-season and the beginning of the season, because it was just, everything was just a mess. Our pre-season, not a lot of people know how disastrous our pre-season was. We had challenge after challenge and problem solving after problem solving from day one when we returned. And I remember some of the discussions with Mitchell in private and how we would be so frustrated with some of the things, and even he was frustrated. And you can, and as I said even earlier, Mitchell was the glue, the energizer. He was the battery, because he he brought this jovialness to the team and this good cop, bad cop sort of. And now you can just imagine when the good cop is now frustrated,
yeah,
and you need the positivity around him. And so the preseason was probably the worst we had while I was at Pirates, because the other two preseasons were magnificent, and this one, for some strange reason, was just problem after problem. And I think if you look back, we were already set for something that was happening already. The universe was communicating.
Yeah.
And then we went on to start the season, and the beginning was shambolic. You know, we lost 3-0 to SuperSport in Mbombela, and it was a terrible performance,
mm-hmm,
with own goals, and it was a mess. And then after that match, I remember even for that match, Mitch was so distant from the team.
Mm.
And we then fast forward to come back, and we come back, and then Micho resigns on a Friday, and on Saturday we have Highlands Park in a cup game, you know. So my goodness, if it was not preset to be a baptism of fire, then I don't know what you can call a baptism of fire.
Yeah.
But I wouldn't have had it any other way,
mm-hmm,
because I think I am what I am today, and I'm as better coach, as better as a human being, because of that period was a fantastic five, six months of my coaching career was incredible. How it stretched me, how it challenged me, how it made me stronger,
mm-hmm,
you know, I am extremely grateful for that period. And
mm-hmm,
even though with a lot of people looking back, they would think it was not as successful as many people think, but I remember that a lot of the problems were solved, and the identity was very, very clear. And with everything that was happening, to still get the team to be sitting in fifth or sixth position before the new coach then came in and took,
mm-hmm,
over in December, I look back on it as a period where I learned so much. I remember we lost to Highlands Park in the cup game 1-0, and then there was a bit of a break, and we had time to train a bit,
yeah,
because there was a FIFA break coming, and then people were already saying, no, the team is bad and it's conceding too many goals. We then went to this back three formation that I was,
yeah,
speaking to you about.
Yeah.
And for two games, we played AmaZulu, we played Golden Arrow, Steve Compello was the coach, and we drew those games, and we stopped conceding.
Mm-hmm.
And then the talk was,
you're
scoring.
Yeah.
And then we had another break, we fixed that, because,
mm-hmm,
we worked so hard on some of the schemes and the patterns to try to make the offensive game of the opposition a little bit more predictable for us to be able to get,
mm-hmm,
more balls higher up. And we knew that if we could do that, we could create a bit more problems from those situations. And then we also had to work a little bit on our offensive patterns, which we worked so hard on, and then we started scoring, but
yeah,
then while we were scoring, we were conceding,
yeah,
and games were 4-3 and 3-2,
yeah, I remember.
And even then you would hit, if there was an award for the team that hit the crossbar the most times, would have been that Pirates team.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? If you could win the league by just hitting crossbar in every single match, we would have won the league hands down.
Yeah.
But football would have it that the results maybe were not the best results, but they were not as bad as everybody makes them out to be.
Yeah.
And I understand it. You know,
mm-hmm,
I understand,
it's
because it's part of football. If the results are not good, and there's no okay results, there's no in between. Results are either good or bad, and that's football. But I understand also that being a young coach and the first black head coach of Orlando Pirates in its history, South African,
mm-hmm,
in its history, the youngest in Pirates' history, I understand that also comes with other,
yeah,
other elements that come into our society, unfortunately. So,
mm-hmm,
so the narrative had to be changed a little bit to say, he's struggling, but a lot of the exams, if you look at them, the playing style, and that is one thing that coaches can promise, is performance and playing style. And I think we were very, very clear.
Yeah.
And I still want someone to show me a game where we did not play the way we I mean, Maritzburg a game we should have won. I remember at Orlando Stadium, we drew, but I remember Kabelo Dlamini with a sitter one-on-one with the goalkeeper, for an example, to beat, and we missed, you know. Lodge against Kaizer Chiefs, we were one man down in the Telkom Cup, and the chances we were creating and producing were very similar.
Yeah.
So from that perspective, I think when they said we were conceding too many goals initially, we solved that problem, and then we were a bit stingier. Then we stopped scoring, and then we had to solve that problem, and then I don't think I would have solved the rest defense problem had I still been part of it.
Yeah.
So being removed from that and having an opportunity then to study the game and to travel to Melwood and to be at Liverpool and to check, I think that also helped me to improve my knowledge of how I want my teams to play.
Yeah.
And one of the biggest things that was a huge problem for us at Pirates was defending while we were in possession of the ball.
Yeah.
And even though I understood what it meant at that time, but studying it,
yeah,
because that was one area that I felt let that Pirates team down, was our rest defense. And we were very vulnerable when we were in possession of the ball, although it was important for us to be in possession of the ball, because we have the responsibility to try to win the games.
Yeah.
But the structure wasn't right.
Yeah.
And the rest defense structure wasn't right. But I got time to go to England and get closer to people in the game, deeper, Klopp, and watching how Liverpool was set up their rest defense, and then Thomas Tuchel was at PSG, who I think even till today is the master of rest defense, in the sense, because structurally his teams very seldom concede on counter attacks, and that was something that I learned from that period at Pirates, and it helped me to be a better coach. Yeah, and today I think I'm much better than I was when I was at Pirates. I'm much better as a person, better human being, and way better as a coach. And I think, as I always say, if I can't be a good human being, then I don't want to be a good coach. I want to be a good coach because I'm a good person also.
Yeah.
But that time at Pirates heightened the desire of going through a lot of things around the team and in the background that made me say, I don't want football to change me.
Yeah.
I want to stay the person that I am and maybe even become an even better person. And that's what Pirates did for me. And I'm eternally grateful. I call it the Harvard of my coach education, my journey. That was my graduation period, and it had to be difficult because I was studying a doctorate.
Yeah.
I was studying to be a specialist in this field, and as you go your third year, your fourth year, your fifth year, your graduation year in any degree or qualification is your hardest, because that's when you have to apply the theoretical plus the practical on the pitches.
Yeah.
On your work and on what you're studying.
Yeah.
And the period where I was given the responsibility to be head coach was my graduation year.
Yeah.
And that's when my practicals were coming. I think I passed that. I passed that because I'm able to look back on it and say, from a lot of these exams, and some of them were even off the pitch, I think I passed those.
Yeah.
I failed a few and I took my losses, but I think those losses are the ones that have helped me to become a better person, because I've learned a lot from those.
Yeah. Given that, do you think you were given enough time?
No, but it's not important what I think, because football is about results, and the results were not consistent enough for me to be given more time. The only sad part with the Pirates' time was that the coach was hired 5 weeks before he was announced, but that's how football works.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? And you have to understand that, you know, and. You have to accept that certain things happen in a certain way, and appreciate the opportunity that you got given, because Not a lot of coaches have been given that responsibility, and not a lot of young coaches, black coaches, who never played professional football, get to be given that enormous task of leading one of the biggest clubs on the African continent. I got given that responsibility. So you've got perspective, you know, you've got to choose how do you look at it. You look at it as a person that didn't get enough time. And if you look at it in that perspective, then maybe you have a more negativity, because the past is more of the challenge. But if you look at it as an opportunity that you got given, that stretched you, that helped you to be better, then you look at it with a different pair of eyes, and that pair of eyes it fills you with a lot of gratitude. And like Dr. Khoza used to say to me, and sometimes I was immature at times, not to listen to some of the advice, because he gave me incredible advice and advice that today still rings in my head. But one of the things he used to say to me is, he said to me, you'll grow old one day and you'll say, what I know, if only I know what I knew then, what I know now. And that was so true, because if only I knew then what I know now, maybe a few decisions that I made would have been made different. But the reality is, I had to go through that to be able to gain the experience and to take my losses so that I could prepare myself for the wins.
Yeah. So the next step then is quite an interesting one, you know, synonymous to Coach Gavin Hunt, who sat here a couple months ago.
Yeah.
And you look at the journey, and you look at the amazing work you had been doing over the years. You had been in teams that have won trophies. You've been in teams that were doing really well, and then the opportunity for Chipper United comes up. What was that like?
Was exciting, because I was frustrated. I had 6 months left with my Pirates contract, and I was talking to Dr. Khoza almost every single day, and he gave me an opportunity to travel and to take a sabbatical, which I'm also very grateful for, because that allowed me to study the game, you know, and refine my methodology, because only then a lot of what I was working on was a lot of the experiences at Sundowns in the youth, and the influence of the Johan Cruyff coaches, and then what I study and I see in games when I watch Man City and I watch all these top teams and with top coaches. And then you develop into a space where you are now itching to get back onto the pitch.
Yeah.
You know, because this is your life, that's what you want to do. And there were a couple of clubs that came calling, and Dr. Khoza was gracious enough to allow me to go to Chipper. And I was excited, because in the short term I wanted to get back onto the pitch, and the team was not in a very good position, but was also not in a very bad position. And then people say, but he failed at Chipper. it's crazy. I read these things sometimes and I say, my goodness.
He didn't even get into the exam room.
Oh, you didn't even. Yeah, we played one match against Bidvest's Gavin Hunt's team.
Yeah.
And we went to Bidvest Stadium and we came out with a draw for Chipper United. A draw, 0-0, where even the first half we were extremely dominant until we had that injury to Mapanga.
Yeah.
And then we had to take Tertius into. It was unbelievable how we played against it, actually.
Yeah.
When we this is how we played, it was crazy, because we didn't have enough time to prepare for this match, but we knew we could get something.
Yeah.
And the lack of a prolific striker gave us a lot of problems, because with Gavin, you know that the most important players for Gavin are his wingbacks.
Yeah.
You know that for sure. And you know that there's balls that are coming in here.
Yeah.
There's balls that are coming in here. You've got to be ready for that if you play against Gavin Hunt.
Yeah.
You've got to be ready for that. And so we did something that I don't think I've ever done before, and I'm not sure if it would work again, but it worked for this match.
Yeah.
we changed and we put our wingers here. And we said to Santi and I think it was Keenan Phillips at that time, we said, or Nazir Ali, I'm not too sure. And we said, all right, you have to choose what you want to do. we're planting our strikers here, so you have to come here and you have to come here.
Mm.
Because Gavin doesn't like this picture.
Mm.
You know, when there's a striker here and the center back comes out, because then this is open.
Yeah.
You know? And so what we did was we had a diamond in the midfield. It's unbelievable. We played with a false nine and we played with two strikers in a 4-4-2 diamond like this. And we put William Twala here, who was a thorn in the flesh then the whole time. Because William has this possibility of coming in between and into the 10 and half space and in between the lines and very smart William Twala, very smart, good intensity. And this role, I think, suited him very, very well. This 10, half 9, half 10 sort of role. And then we had Uteshas on the left because we wanted even sometimes the possibilities to play this ball.
Oh, yeah.
And it's easier to get it with the left foot than to get it with the right foot. Yeah, the diagonal dodge. And Uteshas was so important for us because we then overloaded the midfield. And not only were we giving them problems here.
Yeah.
But we were giving them huge problems here because they only had the two in Thabang Monare, I think, and I'm not so sure. I think Cole Alexandra or maybe even Changasi, if I'm not mistaken. But they had that double pivot in a 4-5-1, 4-4-1-1 sort of structure, where they would have a leading striker and then they would have obviously a 10 that rushes in to create these possibilities.
Yeah.
To go wide and then to deliver crosses and sometimes even double wide, to be honest, to be able to get balls either from here into this position or from here, into this position. So once we stopped killing that, we stopped killing this. They stopped going.
Yeah.
And now he had nothing.
Yeah.
So we were extremely dominant.
Yeah.
Extremely dominant because once they couldn't come up and we had that, we then had enough numbers in here. So we asked William to drop a lot.
Yeah.
And especially when we knew that his center backs are attaching center backs.
Yeah.
So William in that position was big for us because we could get Gattuso, I call him Gattuso, Komane.
Yeah.
You could get Komane on the ball,
and
Komane, one interesting attribute about Komane was, even upon regains, the first pass was always this.
Mm-hmm.
And not a lot of midfielders in South Africa have that.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of midfielders in South Africa have, they win the ball, for an example, in areas like this, and the first option is to receive and stabilize, or receive and stabilize, or receive and stabilize.
Yeah.
But Komane had this incredible capacity to win balls and offensively then put your team in very, very good positions, you know. And from even deeper positions you need that, you know.
Yeah.
And he was not a deep line playmaker. He was more of a central midfielder that played in deeper areas.
Yeah.
But gave the team very good balance and at Bidvest we caused a lot of problems to an extent where Gavin had to then remove the wingers and add a centre back because this ball was without that centre back, this ball was a problem.
Yeah.
And this ball from even Olani to the other side to TK was a huge problem. So we put our strikers, we put TK and we put I think it was Rosaic, if I'm not mistaken, Hamaldin on the side. Rosaic and TK were our wingers, but incredible ability to be able to work and put pressure on the fullbacks and not allow them to deliver balls. And then what killed us was when we had to take Mapanga out and we had to move Uteshas to left back.
Yeah.
And we struggled a little bit with the control in the midfield, you know. And then he moved and he placed an extra centre back which then allowed any one of the centre backs, for an example, when William did that, which was a big problem for them to be able to attach. But even with another centre back, that movement could be occupied.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So even if it would be this one, but whatever run you would have to make, whether from this side or whether from that side, behind or in front, would always still have the capacity to be dealt with because you still had two.
Yeah.
Even with one dropping in and putting a little bit of pressure on that. And then they put a lot more pressure on the two midfielders. Then it was easy to put more pressure on our two central midfielders with their central midfielders. Because now this is covered a bit better with the with the third centre back that is now able to drop into the midfield and put pressure in between the lines. And they had a better coverage and dominance of the pitch. But before that, we had a lot more dominance and we covered the pitch a little bit better than them. And it was a very good game. It's a game that, till today, I still analyze. I still watch that game, especially the first 35 minutes. I think, from a tactical perspective, it was incredible.
Yeah. So you mentioned...
So one game, not defeated at Chipa. One game, no loss. Then COVID happened. I'm not so sure how much of a failure that is. I think I left Chipa United as the only coach that finished his contract and finished his contract undefeated. And that's a failure.
You know, it's always different.
No, the narrative sometimes is what suits the people.
Yeah,
the people want to have a certain narrative that suits them, and that makes them feel a lot better about themselves.
Yeah,
and so if that makes a lot of people feel better about themselves, then I'm very happy to support them.
Yeah, so you then find yourself in a situation synonymous to when you had Sundowns and your contract was coming to an end, similar situation. Now in London Pirates, how does the opportunity to go back to Sundowns?
Well, then I'm a chipper and I'm frustrated because it's COVID and I was working and enjoying working at Chipper. I must tell you, it's a beautiful place to live.
Yeah,
a beautiful club with very good facilities and training pitches, unbelievable. The stadium is top class. The gym, incredible. And a club that if they give you support and I think there's a lot of possibilities for successes at that club. And even Chipampenge is someone I like a lot, and is a person that I think loves his club a lot also, you know. And maybe he's misunderstood, but the reality is there's also a lot of things around that club that does not allow for coaches. Of course, you can see it. It's not just one coach, but if it's 7, 8, 9 coaches, then you have to start asking yourself a lot of problems, questions. But Chipa was good for me because it gave me time to be closer to the beach. I promise you, maybe within the 6 months that I was there, I probably only went to the beach twice. And maybe only after 3 months did I actually even go and swim in the beach.
Yeah.
But it was a fantastic time for me. We did a lot of training in the lockdown and work, and I was really looking forward to finishing the season with Chipa United. But then Coach Pizzo called, and as I was negotiating a new contract with Chipa United, we were then in discussions with Sundowns and the possibility to finish my contract at Chipa and then move back home was open. And then of course, having also enrolled for my UEFA B coaching course, I wanted to focus more on my qualifications and therefore I took the chance to go to Chipa, to leave Chipa and go to Sundowns to be an assistant again, because I felt being a head coach would be a big problem for me with my badges.
Yeah.
But I took that position because I wanted to finish my badges, you know, and and devote a bit of time to my qualifications and my traveling overseas to study. But I was still also speaking to Chiba United because they were very keen to keep me, unlike what some of the reports said, you know. And even then, I left Chiba at the end of my contract. I didn't leave Chiba prior to my contract finishing. It was a 6-month loan deal, and I finished the 6 months at Chiba.
Yeah.
And when the team went into the bubble to finish the season, that's the only time I didn't travel with the team, because I felt it was necessary for the team to prepare with the coach that they would have next season, you know. And once I had made up my mind to rejoin Sundowns, which was at the end of my contract, at the end of June, I then moved to Sundowns and was part of the preparation to finish the season in the bubble with Sundowns.
Mm. And how was it then, returning and walking back into the dressing room and being on the training pitch again with Coach Pito? How was all of that?
A lot had changed, I must tell you. A lot had changed, but a lot had stayed the same. A lot of people that I knew before in the office, in the club, had still been the same people. So an integration and an easier sort of acclimatization was possible.
Yeah.
The players was, most of them were still there, especially the senior ones, Dennis, Kennedy, Shishi, Villa, you know, those were still there, and so it was not so difficult. Langa was still there, Tompo was still there, very important for the previous group, and Coach Pizzo, Coach Magnobo, they were still there, Coach Wendell was still there, so a lot of the things were still, but the club had definitely changed. The things that were done were not things that were used to be done, but you could see that the club was in a space where for sure the profile of it had increased drastically since I had left, and the profile of the players and the winning mentality was second to none, you know. So it was good to be back. I was welcomed back by the president, who is someone who I had always stayed very close to, someone that I had huge admiration for, not just as a president but even as a father figure, you know. And I've been very, very fortunate. And I must tell you, honestly, this is one thing that I look back on, and I can say that I've got two football fathers in Dr. Khoza and Dr. Patrice Motsepe, who are huge intellectuals in their own right, have incredible wisdom. And I've learned so much from both of them, it's not even funny. And I count myself extremely fortunate to consider them my football fathers, you know. And maybe not even just football fathers, but without being biological fathers, I can call them my fathers, you know. I think I can be in a space where if I truly need advice and support, I am sure that I can pick up the phone and call Dr. Khoza and still say, I need advice on this, can you support and assist?
Yeah.
And for sure, 100%, I know that I can pick up the phone at any hour of the day and call Dr. Patrice Motsepe and say, what do you think of this? What do you think about this? And life advices, you know, not just football advices. And so when you've been marinated around that, you accept the incredible blessing that has fallen upon you to be in the space or to live around greatness, and for sure that can only propel you to a different space that says the only understandable or acceptable outcome for this journey is success and nothing else, because the people around you have been successful.
Yeah. So fast forward, Coach Pito then gets the opportunity to go to Al Ahly.
Yeah.
But in that very same moment also comes the opportunity for you to become joint head coach with Coach Magnon.
But before this, there's an opportunity to go with Coach Pito to Al Ahly, which was a spanner in the works, because now you must, and for me it's always, I've always been big on this, is to finish and to be true to my contract.
Yeah.
And now I've just signed a new 4-year contract, a couple of months into the 4-year contract, boom, Coach Pito leaves.
But what happened? Sorry, Coach, I just want to understand. Does he tell you personally?
Yes, that, yes.
Listen, this is what's going to happen.
Yeah, 100%. He says, he calls me and he says, Rulani, this is the picture. And I called you to come back through the club, through Dr. Patrice Motsepe. And we had numerous meetings, myself, Coach Pito, myself, Dr. Patrice, myself, Coach Pito, and Dr. Patrice.
Yeah.
I had one-on-ones with the president. I had one-on-ones with the coach.
Yeah.
Because I wanted to really understand what was happening. And when they brought me back, I knew that it was not just the president that wanted me back, but the coach wanted me back.
Yeah.
And that for me was very important. Mm. And also that knowing, because every single year, even while I was still at Pirates, Dr. Patrice Motsepe would not miss a single one of my birthdays. I knew that I would get a text on my birthday from the president to say happy birthday. And that for me was always also even one of the considerations to say, but you know, when people have been good to you and they love you genuinely, there is a certain form of responsibility to repay that, repay the love, repay the support and the appreciation. Because life is not always about taking, and sometimes you need to give back. You know, it's a biblical principle. As you give, you shall receive. You know what I mean? So even as you receive all the love, the support, the appreciation, and the opportunities, yours is to also give back.
Yeah.
You know, and give back with equal amount of love and appreciation, and you know.
Yeah.
And so when I got back and everyone welcomed me as the prodigal son, and that's what the president termed it. It was exciting, and I think even to this day I look at it and I say, I think I'm very grateful that God has a hand on my coaching career and just on my life.
Yeah.
You know that my moves may not make sense to a lot of people, but the reality is, if you look back, Pirates and the holistic view of the journey there and the time spent there, for sure for me it's a win.
Yeah.
Overall, you know, it's a win. Chipper United, my time there at Chipper United, the amount of players that I helped to improve and the mentality and trying to change a couple of things in a short space of time, I think that's a win.
Mm.
And then coming to Sundowns as that point, you get to that point where you've got a 4-year contract and Coach Pito says, let's go. and then you're sitting there and Coach Pito has your passport.
Yeah.
And you're supposed to be flying out the next day, but the president calls you and says, right, this is the situation. It's co-coach. So I said to him, but Coach Pito has invited me to leave. He says, okay, well, you have to make your decision, what you want, but I'd like to have you and Manova to be co-coach. But the biggest, and not just because the president believed in me and all of us, but the biggest turning point was probably the fact that I had just signed a 4-year contract.
Yeah.
And I had just come back to a club that I had already left for Pirates.
Mm.
And I felt inside of me that my own human values would not allow me, and even though it was a huge opportunity to go to Ali with Coach Pito, but my human values of integrity, loyalty and being a good person.
Yeah.
To be a good person and to be good to the club, to be good to Dr. Patrice Motsepe, to be good to the Sundowns fans who had reaccepted me.
Yeah.
You know, because until today, my relationship with the Sundowns fans is not the strongest.
Yeah.
But I know I've got a lot of work to do to appease them and to make them understand that I am fully with them. You know,
yeah.
I want what they want.
Yeah.
You know, and I am doing the best that I can every single day to make sure that they get what they want.
Yeah.
And I had hoped that me not going to Al Ahly would have been the first step.
Yeah.
Towards appeasing the fans, you know, and the Yellow Nation is a special group, but it's a group that is also a very difficult group. But to not go to Al Ahly and then maybe even turn down some of the offers while I've been back from teams like Zamalek, for example, and Simba, and so many teams even on the African continent.
Yeah,
I hope is strong enough to show that you know, I'm committed to this club and committed to this goal of trying to improve this football club and trying to ensure that we get to the position that all of us want to see it, and that is not always easy to communicate to the supporters,
yeah,
except through actions, and I felt that I needed to do that for my own reputation as a coach, but also because, as I said earlier, I don't want to be a good coach if I'm not a good human being, and being a good human being sometimes is also to turn down very lucrative possibilities for you to grow within your career,
yeah,
for keeping your human values,
yeah,
of honesty and integrity. And when I said 4 years to the president, it must be four years.
Mm.
And up until the club maybe says, no, we don't want it to be 4 years, and the first couple of years have not been good enough. So so you want to invest as much time as you possibly can into making that 4 years a success, and maybe even more.
Yeah.
So turning down Al Ahly was, and Coach Pizzo in particular, was very, very difficult. But I thought,
yeah,
I and till today, I think that was the right decision to do. Mm.
And how did he take it?
Oh, no, very difficult.
Because I know it's like
very difficult. It's not easy to turn Coach Pizzo down.
Yeah.
That is, and it was probably harder than saying to Coach Pizzo, I'm going to Pirates.
Yeah.
When I had to say to him, I'm going to Pirates, that was hard.
Yeah,
that was very, very hard.
Yeah.
And for him to accept, was, it took him a very long time to,
yeah,
accept that. Because and he rightfully so, he felt betrayed in a way, you know, and rightfully so. And I would have felt the same.
Mm.
But then turning him down to go to Al Ahly was even bigger. And so you can imagine if going to Pirates had put a lot of tension between me and Coach Pizzo with our relationship. And
yeah,
we have a very, very strong relationship till today.
Yeah.
He's a mentor, he's an advisor, he's a father figure, he's a brother, he's someone I have huge admiration and respect for.
Yeah.
He's someone I still communicate with, someone that I still believe has played a huge role in my career. So therefore is a coach that I've got incredible respect for.
Mm. So then the opportunity does come as co-coach. What was that conversation like, you know, and especially for us on the outside looking in, it's not something that was synonymous with, it's not something that we are used to.
Yeah.
What was the conversation like with regards to how it would be structured?
Well, there was a lot of in-depth conversations, talks, but some of the talks should be kept a bit private because there's a bit of detail in some of the things, and how it then even came up to a situation where we said, or the president said in his own wisdom, let's have it as a co-coach.
Mm.
And we had a lot of conversations, discussions with the president, myself and the president, Manova and the president, and then the three of us together.
Yeah.
But I think we've done the best that we can to try to make sure that it succeeds. And even when a lot of people felt that it would not succeed, I think it has been relatively very successful, even though there's incredible room for improvement. But the reality is, I think we've put the team first in a lot of situations, and we've tried to make sure that Sundowns is the beneficiary of this collaboration and the work that we try to do every single day, and we put the club first, and I think that's what we've tried to do, and in the future we have to try to continue to do, because the reality is the club is bigger and far more important than any of us could be when it comes to football.
Yeah.
But of course, there are things that are far more important than football, like family, mental health, happiness, peace, and those things are far more important than football. And up until they start to influence the football, you still make football number one.
Yeah.
And football being number one means that we have to put ourselves second and make sure that we sacrifice and push to make sure that the team succeeds and reaches a greater capacity than how we found it.
Yeah. So the season has just passed, and on the domestic front, you did the clean sweep.
Yeah.
Congratulations on that.
Thank you. We worked very hard, and the team deserves applause.
Yeah. But I want us to focus on CAF Champions League, you know, because that is a space that I can strongly see, you know, with regards to your energy towards that. That is something you really, really want to go back and win that, you know. So what was like this season like, you know, especially considering that you guys were playing very well, you guys were doing very well until you came up against Pedro?
Yeah, the Champions League is very interesting. For an example, let me for the past 3-4 years, the pattern has been the same. And the Sundowns get knocked out in the quarterfinals, and we get knocked out in the quarterfinals by losing and then drawing, and for the last three, four years. The quarterfinals have had the same story, and that's why it's important to understand that success has the same clues, and so does failure. And the clues that we've had is that when we finish on top of the group, we then go into the quarterfinals. We travel away, and we seem not to get a very good result away, and then we have to play a little bit under pressure in the second leg, and then we put ourselves in a position where we're chasing results.
Yeah.
So maybe then in that story is also an underlying message, and that is for sure maybe the first thing to look at, where maybe not so much in the group stages does the factor of playing away count, but I think maybe more so playing away in the Champions League, especially as the first leg. I think that there's something, there's a message there that we have to try to get, and we are already in the process of studying, thinking, checking, analyzing, and trying to understand. But football is not a 1+1=2 formula sort of sport. The dynamics change all the time. The influencing factors change all the time. The profile of the teams, the players, the coaches that are there changes all the time, and it becomes very, very difficult to try to have a set way of saying this is the way to win the Champions League. But those that dominate that space also seem, from North Africa, also seem to have a certain understanding of the feeling and the terrain of home matches and away matches, and then that also speaks to not just the traveling, but also the environment that needs to be created.
Yeah.
When you go to Lubumbashi, you feel it's a way. You go to Luanda, you feel it's a way. For an example, when we scored the first goal, the supporters for Petro were extremely important to galvanize the team and say it's we the home side. We have to be stronger than this. We have to fight because that tie could have capitulated easily.
Yeah.
Especially after Mshishi had another chance that hit the upright, you know.
Yeah, the post.
The post. But the fans were important. And I didn't feel that when we were at FNB when they scored first. Do you see what I mean?
Yeah.
I didn't feel that the supporters made the game uncomfortable for Pedro. I didn't feel that, and as I say, then it's got more than just the pitch, but it is an important factor.
Yeah,
and you see it even for the final.
Yeah,
Wydad versus Al Ahly. You see how important it was for Wida to have
that
support, because that then it flips the script.
Yeah, it definitely does. Because I was there that night at FNB for the second leg, and you sort of had the sense it was very nervy, you look at some of the chances you guys would create, especially in the first half. You know, Peter.
Yeah.
Some of the chances he has.
Yeah.
You've got Shishi, who doesn't manage to convert the penalty. So there's so many of these things.
Yeah, but how many penalties has Shishi scored? How many of those similar chances would you give to Peter any other day, and you would put it in the back of the net? But because the game was so important for the players, they needed extra. Mm. You know, and not just from us, but And that's where we have to get to.
Yeah.
And I was so happy when I heard our chairman address this point, because it is a point that I strongly believe that's the one step we need to get into being a top four, top two Champions League side. Is this feeling of you can't come here and beat us.
Yeah.
But that environment needs to be created.
Yeah,
and you hear a lot, even Pep and sometimes Thomas, and they say and sometimes Jorgen, it's not so much with Anfield, to be honest, but you see, even for an example, where how COVID affected the big teams, and Liverpool, for an example, moved from in the season under COVID, moved from averaging just over 2 points per game at Anfield to less than 1.5 points per match at Anfield. The stadium is the same, it's just that the seats are empty. The dimensions, it's still, if it's 118 wide and it's deep by 100 and, I don't know, 10, whatever it may be, whatever is the size, the dimensions, is still the same.
It's the same.
But the feeling that is created around that by the supporters makes a big difference to see this is the Anfield, you know, and particularly when you attack or defend the Kop side, you know, there's a certain feeling, and then that pushes, and that's the same with Real Madrid. When you go to the Santiago Bernabeu, there's a certain feeling, and when the white flags are in motion,
the amount of comebacks this past season,
you have a look at that, and you see even in the Champions League, you know, so winning Champions League is very, very difficult, and has got so many other dynamics to it that is more than just what happens on the pitch.
Yeah. So, Coach Villani, we're now headed into two of my favorite segments.
Yeah.
We've got Best 11.
Yeah.
And then we've got Coach's Corner.
Yeah.
But with the Best 11 edition, because you've been at Sundowns for a very long time.
Sure.
I'll give you two Best 11s. The first Best 11. I want your best 11 of Sundowns. So, in all your time of being there.
Yeah.
So, the past, present, the best 11.
No. That one would be... You know, I must tell you, I've thought about this question a lot. I've thought about if I were to ever be asked my best 11, who would be in my... And I must tell you, I struggle. Because there's so many good players. Like, honestly, I must tell you, as a youth coach, how many top players I've coached in the academies. I mean, Dino Rovu, I coached at Platinum Stars.
Yeah.
Percy, I coached in the youth. Then you go on to, I mean, in the midfield, I've coached Musa Nyatama, Bongani Zungu, Ben Mutsware, Kola Mlambo. I've coached even Maleven. Maleven played for Blackpool. For me, one of the best midfielders I've coached. Jaiva Yoyo, who plays for Black Poison, is one of the best I've coached, you know, central midfielders. And even though he hasn't played professional football, but Tumi Mokotsi, for me, is one of the best I've coached, you know. So I've been very privileged, to tell you the truth, to coach some top footballers. And I must tell you, imagine having to choose. I've tried. I can never put 11 out.
You can't put 11 out.
Very difficult.
You can't put 11 out. Okay, but there's two players you mentioned there.
Yeah.
And you mentioned Percy Tau.
Yeah.
And you mentioned Mohani Zungu.
Yeah.
Two players that you're very close to.
Yeah.
You know. So we'll start with Percy Tau.
Yeah.
What is your guys' relationship like, especially considering you guys come from the youth development at Sundowns?
I love Percy. Percy is my son, man.
Mm.
Percy comes to my house and takes his hat off. He doesn't just enter my house and it's okay, hat, big star. No, no.
Mm.
Percy is still the Percy that I had when I had in the academy.
Yeah.
Respectful, humble, coachable, and very honest.
Mm.
Very, very honest. We have very good, honest discussions. When I left Sundowns, Percy was one of the first people I confided in to give advice as to whether to leave Sundowns or to go to Pirates.
Mm.
Percy was one of the first, and him and Madisha were the only ones at Sundowns that knew that there's a possibility that I could leave.
Mm.
And Percy was one of the first that I spoke to when I was thinking of going back to Sundowns. Percy,
yeah.
I was one of the first people that knew that Percy had an offer to go to Brighton.
Mm.
When he wanted to come back to Al Ahly from Brighton, I was one of the first, and I
mm.
gave him my opinion. And my opinion was a very honest opinion,
yeah.
You know. And I love Percy's mom too. I love Percy's family. In fact, I love the brothers. Percy's mom and I, we speak a lot, and even to an extent where I remember when he was in the academy, there were days where Percy would go AWOL and not go to church, and then Percy's mom would phone me and say, "Hey, you see your son has started again. Hey, sort him out, because
yeah.
me, I can't do this." So that's how far we go with Percy. Very special place in my heart. He played a huge role in where I am as a coach today.
Yeah. And then the second gentleman, Bongs.
Yeah, Bongs is Bongs is another crazy. But I try my level best to be the type of coach that I didn't have.
Mm.
And part to that means also I had a coach in Thabo who was very close to his players, you know, and he got the best out of me by being very close to me.
Yeah.
So I try to be very close sometimes, and I'm very grateful that I've had very, very strong relations with quite a lot of the ones that I've coached who are good people.
Yeah.
You know? And I've kept them in my life, and these are people that I don't only consider players that I've coached, but I consider them friends, I consider them my brothers, and some of them, even though they are older than me, and some of them are same age and maybe even slightly younger than me,
mm-hmm.
consider me their father, you know, and I'm very grateful for that, because even a player like Bongs and a human being like Bongs is someone that has invited me to France to meet the sporting director of Amiens, and today I can pick up the phone and speak to people in France. His head coach is someone that I still have conversations with about football and what is happening. The sporting director is someone that has huge respect for me as a coach, and that couldn't happen without Bongs, you know. So but generally players that I've worked with I keep very close to me, because I try to maintain that space. And players at Pirates, players at Chippa, at Sundowns, and now I got the opportunity to go to Uganda through Dennis Onyango, but because of the relationship that I have with Dennis, so I'm very fortunate, you know. I count myself very fortunate that a lot of the players that I've coached have had huge capacity, and because of the huge capacity, I've had the responsibility to see them grow and to help them to improve, and because of that's fostered a very stronger relationship, and one that goes beyond. I was saying to Bongani Zungu just yesterday, imagine for how long we've known each other, and Bongani Zungu is a very difficult character, but Rulani is also a very difficult character. So we were saying and laughing about that yesterday to say, imagine how much effort we have had to put in to make sure that we maintain
the relationship,
but he's done very well for himself, and he's someone also that I'm very proud of.
Yeah. So, the last segment.
Yeah.
Coach's Corner.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, in this segment.
Yeah, yeah.
I need your top five South African coaches of all time. And then, we'll start with this one though. It's a question. Given the opportunity, would you ever take the Bafana job?
Not now. I'm very clear in my mind about Bafana, not now. Maybe in the future, but definitely not now. I'd love to finish my career coaching a national team and as an old man. And,
yeah.
and I coach every 3 months. Yeah. I think that job is okay for that. But yeah. I've got too much energy to coach every 3 months. Mm-hmm. It would kill me. So no, not. In fact, I was in Uganda and live on TV.
Yeah.
They offered me the Ugandan job. Yeah. And I said no, but first is out of respect for Micho.
Yeah.
As a brother, as a friend, as a colleague, as someone I worked with, I mean, I don't think that's right to even entertain that type of talk because he needs to be given time and possibilities to turn the corner and improve. He's been there, he's succeeded, and there's no reason why he cannot succeed even beyond what he achieved before. And then also because of my own personality, I don't think I have it in me to coach every 3 months. No. Mm. So Bafana, not now, but maybe when the time is right.
Yeah.
It's a possibility.
You need to smell the grass every day.
No, I need that. It keeps me going. It keeps. I think I would lose my mind at this moment in my career if I'm not on the pitch. I want to be on the pitch. I want to live with the team. And die with the team. Suffer with the team. Hear the team grow. You hear the team grow when you're on the pitch.
Mm.
You. It's a living organ.
Yeah,
it's a cell that you've got to feed every single day. You've got to be close to it every single day, because otherwise, if you let go, it grows without you.
Yeah,
and when it grows without you, don't be surprised when you meet a beast that is not a beast that you want.
Yeah,
but when you are close to it and you suffer with it, you cry with it, you celebrate with it, you hear the quarrels between the players, you live with it.
Yeah,
it's easy to help it become a species, a complete species that you can be proud of.
Yeah.
So I live on the pitch. Small-sided games, I'm on the pitch.
Yeah.
I'm hearing how this player speaks to this player.
Yeah.
I hear how this player, his tone changes when he speaks to that player.
Yeah.
I hear when they celebrate because this one has scored and this, and then I can manage even the dynamics within the group, and I can. And I know how important this player is to this player, and maybe the relations might not be very, very good, but I try to foster even better communications, or maybe when we have fun games, you try to put these players together and you try to build this this team. But if you are too far from it, and this is what I learned from Pizzo also, if you are too far from it, the team can easily develop into something that might not be what you want, because then it grows. But it grows without your influence. And that becomes very dangerous.
Yeah.
So hence I said to you that the next generation of coaches in the next few years are going to be coaches that are very good on the pitch and invest a lot of time on the pitch. But I have to be very competent on the pitch.
Yeah.
And because a lot of the success and failures now in modern football comes from the work that is done Monday to Friday on the pitch, and not just over 90 minutes. The 90 minutes is just a means to test you for the work you've done and the studying that you've made. But the reality is the 90 minutes is just a reflection of Monday to Friday and the work that you put in.
Mm. So, coach, I need your top 5 South African coaches.
Sure, very difficult to answer that also because... No, it's tough because first I've had a lot of contributors to my career. Maybe not, they may not be the top five in the context of what they've achieved in South African football, but they can be the top five for me in how they've influenced my career. Like like Alan Freeze.
Yeah.
If I say top five, people say oh, but top five for
you,
me.
Yes.
Alan Freeze is one of them. You know, because of what I learned from him and the time that I spent with him.
Yeah.
Temba, for me, would not make... I have to, but Temba is important for how I bounce off ideas and what do you think? How do you... Michael Loftman, for me, for one, is incredible, you know, exceptional mind and very important for me as a coach because he doesn't always agree with everything that I say. Top five for me, but in terms of what he's achieved in the game, not necessarily.
Yeah.
And then you have Jomo Sono, for an example, who who is family also, but is a top coach also.
Mm.
And then if you put him in the top five, it's biased, this thing, you know. So I've worked with great coaches like Kevin and Temba and Michael and top coaches.
Yeah.
But I've also seen and learned a lot from even from a distance, like a Stuart Baxter, when I have coffee with him and I speak to him, a Middendorp.
Yeah.
You know, these coaches are coaches that for me have played incredible roles in South African football, but may not necessarily be everybody's top five.
Yeah.
But I would presume that we've had incredible coaches in this country and coaches that have played their roles in shaping. Clive Barker would deserve a mention. You know, Steve Compella would deserve a mention. Pietso Mosimane would deserve a mention. These are coaches that I've worked with and I've learned so much from. You know.
Yeah.
But the reality is it becomes so difficult because these are also my colleagues.
Mm.
You know, these are my colleagues, and you don't want to be put in a situation where you're naming a top five. We're top five. So you think I'm not one of the best, but I will tell you that if I could, I could name a top five if I could. But the reality is, I've learned so much from so many coaches that it would become very, very difficult to just formulate a top five. And I know I'm being a bit difficult.
Playing on the fence.
I'm playing on the fence and in between the lines, but I hope you understand because the players, you know, you think to yourself, my goodness, imagine you have to choose a top 11 and you've got to choose between Dennis Onyango, Kennedy Mwini, Riyad Peters, top Ricardo Gosfomi, incredible goalkeeper, you know, that I've worked with. Wayne Sandilands, astute professional.
Yeah.
Crazily devoted to his career.
Yeah.
And then I've got to choose the one out of that. It's difficult. And then I've worked with Madisha. I've worked with Happy Jelle. I've worked with Marcelo, who's now in Portugal. Nyasha, who's now playing in France at centre half. And when we turned Nyasha into a centre back, and we said, he's a top football player. People said, no, but today... Exactly, he's linked to Brighton. You see why we believed so much in him.
Yeah.
And when the club, at a certain point, almost sent him again on loan to Barroca, we said, no, we need this guy, you know.
Yeah.
And the only surprise for me is how well he's gone back now into centre-back.
Yeah.
And I think having played, to central midfield, and I think having played at centre-half, for us helped his game defensively improve, and I watch his games now in France. He's a tank, he's a beast, strong, aggressive in the duels and the like, and even the usage of the ball, the relationship with the ball and decision making in certain moments, incredibly huge evolution from Nyasha. But imagine that you have to choose. You have to choose between Musa, Zungu, Kola. Even now, some of the midfielders we have, how do you choose? Now you have AJ, you have Riva, you know. You have to choose between Shishi, Lodge, Vincent Bulle, Memela.
Yeah.
Very, very difficult. So they say blessings and burdens are cousins. So I don't want to carry the burden of having to choose a starting or a best 11, even though I have a clear recognition and appreciation for the blessing that I've had to be able to coach some of the best players that this country has ever seen.
Yeah. So, no, it's really a chance. A coach did not put me.
I didn't choose one.
You didn't choose one. Coach Rulani, I thoroughly appreciate this.
Thank you so much for having me.
No, thank you very much for
coming. It was good to be here.
No, it was great to have
thank
you.
Thank you.
No. You know, and I think this is by far one of the most important, if not the most important episode, you know, that
You've had some great episodes. You had Michael, I've watched Kevin's episode. I watched Kevin Johnson's episode. Was top. And that's why I didn't do a top five. Because I said Kevin didn't put me in.
Yeah.
Malaka. But got huge, huge love and appreciation for Kevin Johnson and the role he played in my career.
Yeah.
I've got huge, huge respect for him. And top coach, top football coach, and I learned so much from him.
Yeah, no, I truly, truly appreciate the conversation we've just had. And I can tell we can have conversations for hours and hours. And maybe who knows? Maybe part two, guys. If you comment,
maybe.
Comment. Just maybe.
Maybe. And we can talk football and tactics only for part two.
Yeah, definitely. Coach Onani,
thank you
very much.
Thank you, big brother.
Thank you. Wishing you all the best going into the new season. And hopefully, going to Africa.
Yeah. We'll do our best. And wishing you all the best. Keep shining, keep growing, keep expanding this. This is incredible. It's a fantastic resource for coaches, and I hope you can continue with the great work and you can grow this child.
Yeah.
Live with it. Suffer
yeah.
with it. Go through the good moments, the bad moments, but stay close to it.
Yeah.
Because it will develop into a beast that will surprise you one day. So keep up the great work, and to you and your team, we wish you nothing but the best.
You guys heard Coach Rulani saying these things to me. I'm joking. Coach.
Well deserved. I don't say things that I don't mean.
Yeah.
I'd rather keep quiet. So
yeah.
when I say something, it's because I mean it.
Yeah.
You're doing a fantastic job, and I wish you nothing but the best and more successes.
No, thank you very much.
More episodes.
And that was yet another special episode of Disky Talk with Leolo. Sign